Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve. Yeah.
Radio Theater.
In the Air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 6 minutes after 11 p.m. right here on the WGN Radio Theater, program 208 in the series. This is August 20th, and we're going to play some classic radio shows tonight, Lisa.
And August 20th is a special day because it's Carl's birthday today. So
yeah,
happy birthday,
we're celebrating.
Carl.
Thank
happy birthday,
you so
Carl.
Much. And happy birthday to
and
you.
And it was Mike's birthday on Monday.
Correct.
And it's Kasara's birthday this coming Saturday. So it is one big party here tonight.
Kasara Heining is, she is producing the show tonight. Good to see
that
you.
Yeah,
good,
we're
as, good to
going
see
to
you.
Party hardy tonight.
And Roger had something to say up there. Yes, Roger?
Yeah, my birthday is next year.
It is?
Excellent.
Oh, man.
Then you know what? You've got to be. What did I say to you before we came down?
It's not a party unless I'm there.
There you go.
We have
and
presents.
Boy,
and I'm
such low standards you have.
Well, that might be.
We have cake, we have presents, and we have classic radio shows. We're going to tune into The Shadow starring Bill Johnstone. Then we have Fort Laramie starring Raymond Burr. And then Raymond Burr stars in an episode of Suspense. Now, we had a tragic loss. A good friend of mine, Jerry Lewis, who licensed me the radio episodes and the TV episodes, we were not able to play an episode of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. He passed away. Jerry Lewis passed away at the age of 91 today, comedy legend, and we will do a special on Jerry Lewis later in the month. We can't play an episode next week. We've already locked that show up, but we'll play a real nice tribute to Jerry Lewis coming your way later. It'll have to be in September. Promise we'll do that. All of these classic radio shows are brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Cleopatra, a remake of the 1963 movie starring Elizabeth Taylor.
Really?
Yes.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Wow.
And the winner will get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She was the star, and she played a character named Fox in 2008's movie Wanted.
Father was one of the greatest assassins who ever lived. The man who killed him is behind you.
All right, who is that action star?
Is she on your list, Carl?
Oh,
that's what I
thought.
What
do you think?
I thought she was.
All right, 312-981-7200. Give us a call if you know who that beautiful actress is.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. This is a special birthday edition. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Father was one of the greatest assassins who ever lived. The man who killed him is behind you.
And Kasara took a phone call offline, and we found out that Amanda knew the right answer, and she knew that that was Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
The beautiful, as you called her.
Yes.
And she's from Hoffman Estates, and so congratulations to Amanda. She has won a Twilight Zone 4
Amanda's
CD set.
From Hoffman Estates or Angelina Jolie's from Hoffman Estates?
Well, I know you'd be wishing it was Angelina,
yes,
but
because
hey,
I'd be moving to
although
Hoffman
although Amanda might be, you know, somebody special.
I got to
as
meet
well.
Angelina Jolie years
did you
ago.
Really?
Yeah, on the set of The Changeling. I happened to be working with one of the producers on that movie.
Did you talk to her?
Clint Eastwood movie. Yeah, met her, and Brad Pitt was there. And
so I've heard there's some trouble in paradise.
Yeah,
with those two.
I don't, yeah, they're not together anymore.
Yeah.
So she's available.
Right, that's
and
my
so
point.
Is he, I guess. But you're taken, Lisa.
But you're not.
Yeah.
So congratulations to Amanda. She will get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Very, very good. All right, so you know what? There's another way to win some Twilight Zone CDs, right, Mike?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so here's the way to win some Twilight Zone CDs tonight. We have we've picked out three songs. Roger picked out a song, I picked out a song, and Lisa picked out a song from 1973, our three favorite songs, and they're all different. Mike, what's your favorite song from 1973?
Oh, I don't know. I might start
Bad
playing
Bad Leroy Brown.
I might start playing once we get to the year that I was born, at least.
Yeah, 1997.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can start texting, and if you have an idea of what my favorite song is and Lisa's favorite song, because someone's already identified Roger's favorite song.
You know what? It was the first thing, like at 11:05, first thing that came through was Roger's song. Can I say it now?
No, because we're
going
to play it.
Okay.
We're going to play a clip. Let's get into the shadow. When we come back, we'll play Roger's favorite song. So we've already got a winner for that. But my favorite song from 1973 and Lisa's favorite song from 1973, if you can identify it, you just have to text in at 312-981-7200. Just go online and look up the 100 most popular songs of 1973 and see if you can figure out what Lisa's is and mine is, because Roger's has already been identified.
He's an easy mark.
Yeah. And if you're the first person that texted in, now you have to say Lisa or Carl, because otherwise we're not going to know. 312-981-7200. You'll win some Twilight Zone CDs. But right now, it's time for The Shadow. This was one of radio's most popular mystery detective shows. And when it first came on radio in the 1930s, it was not Lamont Cranston. It was just a narrator of stories out of Street and Smith magazine. They were like mystery stories that this narrator would read. But in 1937, they completely revamped the show, and they cast Orson Welles as the Shadow's alter ego, Lamont Cranston, and Agnes Moorehead, remember her, and Dora from Bewitched, the lovely Margot Lane. Now, the Shadow had learned the secret of invisibility by clouding men's minds. He used this power to fight crime. So, Lisa, you couldn't get away with all the things you do, because the Shadow would know what you're doing. Bill Johnston was the second Shadow. John Archer, who is Ann Archer's dad, was the third Shadow. And then Brett Morrison carried the role the longest. Margot Lane was the only person who knew the identity of the Shadow, except for us, the listeners. We all knew. And the radio show lasted until 1954. Alec Baldwin played him in the movies. In the late 80s or early 90s, something like that. It was a Shadow movie. Well, it wasn't that great. I keep hearing rumors that there's going to be a new, you know, blockbuster Shadow movie, so we'll see. But right now, it's time for a radio adventure from February 22nd, 1942. This is called Death Gives an Encore, and it stars William Johnstone and Marjorie Anderson as Lamont Cranston and the lovely Margot Lane. You'll hear Alan Reed tripling in the show, tripling. He plays three roles. Fred Flintstone plays three roles in this. Let's tune this in. Part one of The Shadow.
Adventures of the Shadow are on the air, brought to you each week at this time by your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Several years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret. The secret of hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible Shadow belongs. Today's drama, Death Gives an Encore.
As the surgeon knows, the phenomenon called life is a delicate balance. To tamper with that balance is to upset it, and to upset it is to create a monster. neither living nor dead. A creature with no conscience, no mind of its own, but obeying the will of its bloodthirsty master. This is the story of a scientist who walked a road no mortal man dare travel.
And in conclusion, gentlemen of the Biologist Society, may I say that I have actually seen cases of this living surgery in the Orient. I have seen whole parts of bodies transplanted successfully. Vital organs removed from one person and grafted onto another.
Professor Gondo, may I say you leave so much to the imagination.
Are you implying that I lie, Professor Wallace?
I'm not implying. I say that you're a fraud and have no business here addressing a group of scientists.
Right.
I quite agree with that. Yes.
Well, Gondo, where is the proof of your statements on living surgery?
For 10 years, Wallace, you have attempted to ruin me. I have given you no reason, no cause for these unjustified attacks on me.
Proof? Where's your proof?
You have seen my collection of photographs of actual cases.
Fakes, every one of them.
You'll pay for this, Professor Wallace.
I might add that you're a much better photographer than you are a man of science.
Yes, you'll pay for this, Professor Wallace. You'll pay.
Williams dies tonight in chair. Knife for Williams to be executed tonight. Read all about it.
This is the end of the road for you, Williams. Have you any last words? Any last requests?
Yeah, Warden. Free my hands and give me a knife.
I see, Williams. Still unrepentant. May the Lord see fit to pardon your sins. All right. Knifer Williams is dead.
Commissioner Weston speaking.
Hello, Commissioner Weston. Yes. This is Warden Sloan of the State Prison speaking.
Yes, Warden, yes.
Commissioner, Knifer Williams' body was placed in the prison morgue and...
Did you call me at 4 o'clock in the morning to tell me that?
No, sir.
What then?
His hands, Commissioner. His hands have been amputated.
Amputated?
They're missing.
Good Lord, missing. Why?
I don't know, sir. It looks like the job of a skilled surgeon. In some way, someone got into the morgue and mutilated William's body.
Mr. Bartolini's not in his dressing room, Mr. McManus.
Hey.
I went in to check on his costumes.
Not there?
No, sir.
But his Capi's acted the star act on the bill. Now, what can we tell the audience?
Well, that's your business,
sir. Well, you know they only come to see Bartolini's triple somersault in midair.
Everything's gone from his dressing room, sir.
Flew the coop, eh?
I don't know, sir. There's only a large wooden box there.
Box? Well, let me see it. Come on.
You know, Mr. McManus, I have a strange feeling about this. There's been a man... Oh, here it is, Mr. McManus. Sort of looks like a small coffin, don't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I'm going to open that box. Oh, wait a minute. What's this? There's a note attached to the side.
Yeah.
It says, Bartolini won't need these anymore. It's unsigned. Well, I don't get it. Open the box.
All right.
Just his arms. Bartolini's two arms in the box. Amputated at the shoulder.
I don't suppose you remember me, Mr. Cranston. I met you several years ago in the Orient.
Well, as a matter of fact, Professor Wallace, I remember you quite well. You were doing research work in tropical diseases at the time.
Yes, that's quite right. If I'm not mistaken, you are something of a student of criminology.
Oh, why?
Well, it's for that reason that I've asked you here tonight.
Well, criminology is just a hobby, Professor Wallace, but I am very much interested in the subject.
That's a masterpiece of understatement.
What was that?
Oh, nothing. I'm sorry I interrupted you. Please go on.
Oh, yes. Well, to come to the point, what would you say, Mr. Cranston, if I were to tell you that I have, for the last several years,
been driving a man systematically insane.
What are you saying?
Now, wait, please, hear me out. First hear my reasons before you condemn me.
Please go on.
I assure you my motives are above censure when judged in the light of medical science.
Drive a man insane? Well, you think that by doing that you're helping mankind?
Yes, I do, Miss Lee. See, this man's brain was warped before he ever crossed my path. I immediately recognized the danger in allowing this man to continue with his diabolical experiments. Experiments with living bodies.
Oh, Lamont.
I don't believe I quite understand, Professor Wallace.
Experiments with living surgery, Mr. Cranston. The grafting of arms and legs and vital organs from one body to another.
Oh.
The man's name is Gondo, a brilliant biologist whose intense work in the field of biological research twisted his mind.
Uh-huh.
There's no telling what horrible crime he might not commit in his effort to prove his theories.
Oh, why wasn't some effort made to cure him?
Cure is out of the question, Miss Lane. That horrible obsession is beyond medical aid.
Oh, I see.
So my sole purpose was to make Professor Gondo commit some act of violence toward me. Then I could have him sent away to some institution where he'd be safe. And at last, I think I have succeeded. Read this note I just received.
Uh-huh.
What does it say, Lamont?
My brain against yours, Professor. The body of a skilled gymnast, and in a murderer's hand, cold steel, thirsting for your blood. Tonight. Why, it's unsigned.
It's undoubtedly from my friend, Gondo.
Well, you don't seem very much upset by that threatening note, Professor Wallace.
Well, Miss Lane, my apartment here is 22 floors off the street, and the halls are guarded by private detectives.
Lamont, look!
Where?
Look out the window over there. I saw someone on the window ledge of the building across the court.
Why, that's impossible. There's not enough ledge on those windows for a cat to walk on. I can't see anybody. It's too dark.
Right? Well, I'm sure I saw someone for a moment.
Probably your nerves, Margot. I can't say I blame you after hearing that.
What was that?
Came from my study. My assistant, Peterson, is going over some notes of mine in there.
Come on.
Yes, yes, of course.
Oh no.
Don't look, Margot.
Peterson. He's dead, Cranston. Stabbed through the throat with a knife.
No, Wallace, not stabbed. That knife was thrown. And look. The window was slightly open at a level with his head.
Thrown? Miss Lane was right about seeing someone across the way.
Careful, Wallace. The killer may still be there.
Look out! What was that?
Another knife.
There's a note attached to it. Read it, Prince.
Yes. Fear festers like an evil disease. The first knife was to plant the infection. The next to drain your life's blood.
All right, Cardona. Call me back here at Professor Wallace's apartment.
Well, Commissioner?
It seems Miss Lane was right about seeing somebody across this court. My men have found a good set of fingerprints on the ledge of that window across there.
Uh-huh.
They're checking through the files now.
We were sure of that before you found the prints, Commissioner.
Of course, Waldemir Gondo's fingerprints.
And how do you know this guy Gondo sent Professor Wallace the note? It wasn't signed.
He threatened me before.
Oh, wait, wait. Step by step, Professor. Step by step. Now, while you're all sitting in here, Miss Lane sees somebody across the court, 20-some stories off the street and hanging on the ledge. Hanging on a ledge, mind you, like a fool monkey. Why, it'd have to be another Bartolini to do that.
Bartolini? Yes, that's the name I was trying to remember. Bartolini, the great trapeze performer.
So you think it's Bartolini, huh?
It could have been, Commissioner.
Yeah, could have been, Miss Lane. However, it seems that somebody bumped Mr. Bartolini off some 3 weeks ago.
Yes, that's it. And sent his arms back in a box. That mutilation slaying, do you remember it, Professor Wallace?
Yes, his arms were severed at the shoulder. The rest of his body hasn't been found. Cranston, do you think there's a possibility that Gondo succeeded in his experiment?
Wait, I'll answer. It's probably for me. Hello? Yes, speaking. Oh, yes, Cardona, you checked the prints. All right. Well, whose are they? Whose? Check them again. You heard me check them again, and if you give me the same answer, you're fired. Ridiculous.
Whose fingerprints were they, Commissioner?
Dopes. I'm going to clean out that whole fingerprint department.
Whose prints were they?
He said they were Knifer Williams' prints.
And Knifer Williams died in the electric chair 4 weeks ago.
Act two of Death Gives an Encore will continue in just a moment.
All right, that is the first portion of The Shadow from February 22nd, 1942, starring Bill Johnstone with Death Gives an Encore. We will get back to it in just a few minutes. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will reveal Roger's favorite song from 1973. We had someone right away get Roger's song, and then other people have called in or texted in with Roger's song correct, but it's only the first person that got it right that's going to win the Twilight Zone CDs. You got to be quick on the text in line. Now, here is Roger's favorite song from 1973. Roger likes these long intros on his
songs. Yeah, just I know it makes you so happy. When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school. Ooh, can you say that on the radio?
I think so.
Ooh.
It's a wonder
I can think at all. Can we sing along?
Let's not run it.
What can you see? I can read the writing on the wall.
So we had a winner.
Yeah, Kodachrome. And
again, good job, Roger. Great
song. Thank you. Thank you. And again, that was the one that my wife picked out of the hat, not knowing what she was doing at the time and looking at me weirder than she normally does. But
how's that possible?
It's really weird because her eyes kind of turn inside out. But that was one of, what did I say? It was like 10?
Like about that. I mean, yeah. You just had so much trouble choosing the top, so you better get going for 1974.
Well, I'm down to
about 52?
Yeah, I'm down to 17. I'm getting there.
Good job.
All right, so while we were playing that, we had a couple of winners text in for Lisa. Two or three people had Lisa's song right. So the very first person that texted in with Lisa's correct song is going to win. I'm sorry, the other people will not. But no one has guessed my song yet from 1973. So you can still try to guess my song from 1973.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Welcome back, and I think it's we got a few minutes. Let's play Lisa's favorite song from 1973.
LA. Ooh, too much for the man.
Too much for the man. He couldn't make it.
So he's leaving the life.
You know, they don't make songs like this anymore.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Really?
Yeah, I really was.
He said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh, 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 what's left of this world. The world he left behind. Not so long ago.
Midnight Train to Georgia.
It's a good one.
Significance to the group, Gladys Knight and the Pips. I can't remember the song. I don't know if it's that one or if it's another one. But one of their songs was Uncle Bobby's favorite song ever.
Hmm.
He used to play it a lot on his show.
Sure.
And I can't remember which one it was. I'm sure one of our listeners will let us know.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it just, you know, it hits me right.
Yeah. Well, that's Lisa's favorite song. No one's guessed mine yet. But the people that have, we've notified the two people that have won the Twilight Zone CDs for Roger's song and Lisa's song. But mine's still up for grabs. 1973, my favorite song. You can text us here at 312-981-7200. In the meantime, let's get back now to The Shadow.
Now, back to The Shadow.
Come on, what on earth do you make of this whole business?
Margot, I don't think Bartolini is dead. Everything points to the fact that Gondo was successful in his experiments.
Well, then the creature I saw on that window ledge
may have been the trained acrobat Bartolini with the grafted arms of the knifer Williams.
Oh, but how could Gondo control the brain of his monster?
I don't know that, Margot. But the Shadow is going to interview Professor Gondo in his laboratory. Perhaps he will find the answer there.
soon. Soon. Proof you wanted, eh?
Well, proof you shall have.
Professor Gundo.
What? I heard something. There's nobody here.
You're wrong, Professor Gundo. The shadow is also here.
Where? Where? I don't see anyone.
The shadow cannot be seen by your eyes.
Why did you come here?
I want to know about your experiments in living surgery.
Living surgery? Why do you want to know?
An attempt was made on the life of Professor Wallace tonight. You are under suspicion.
Suspicion?
Do you admit, Professor Gundo?
I do not admit anything, Shadow. But I can tell you frankly, I would like to see him dead. I hate him.
And you tried to kill him?
No. No, Shadow. If I were to kill Professor Wallace, mind you, I say if, it would be with these two hands.
And not the hands of Knifer Williams grafted to the body of Bartolini, grafted by you as an instrument of your revenge?
You speak in riddles, Shadow. I do not understand.
Perhaps you find it convenient not to understand, Gundo.
What's that? Someone is tapping on my window.
Gundo, stay away from that window.
I must see what it is. There is no one here.
Come away from that window. Gundo. Dead. Killed by a thrown knife.
X-ray paper, read all about it. New knife slaying. Professor Gundo, third victim of fiendish knife murderer. Police request anyone with possible clues to identity of murderer to come forward. Police request anyone with possible clues to identity of murderer to come forward.
Commissioner Weston stated this morning that, in his opinion, the killings have not reached an end. The murderer said he will attempt to cover his tracks by killing anyone whom he believes can reveal him. Reveal him. Yes, yes, of course. Hello, operator. Get me police headquarters immediately. Oh, I hope it isn't too late. Hello, police? I must speak to Commissioner Weston. Hurry, please. I think I can identify the knife murderer. Yes. Well, I'm the wardrobe mistress for Romero Brothers Circus, and I remember the man who was last seen with Mr. Bartolini. And if I'm in danger because of that... What? Oh, yes, I'd know him in a minute. He knew Mr. Bartolini and was always around. He seemed to take an unusual interest in Mr. Bartolini. Mr. Bartolini! You
are going to die, Mrs. Dorner. You are going to die.
Mr. Bartolini, that knife. What are you going to do with that knife?
I must kill you.
No.
You must be put out of the way.
Oh, Mr. Bartolini, what have I ever done to you? Oh, please. No, don't throw that knife.
I tell you, Cranston, I was talking to the woman on the phone when it happened. She was just going to give me a description of the murderer when she met her death, a knife in her throat. What I can't understand is her calling out Bartolini's name.
Bartolini? Well, Lamont, then you were right about his not being dead.
Begins to look that way, Margot. Not dead. Bartolini's amputated arms were sent back in a box.
That doesn't necessarily mean that he's dead.
Now, don't try to tell me my business. I say that there have been four murders. Bartolini, Peterson, Gondo, and now Mrs. Dorner, the wardrobe mistress at the circus.
You're leaving out something very important, Commissioner.
Yeah? You fascinate me, my amateur sleuth.
What is it? Not it, Commissioner. Knifer Williams.
Knifer Williams was executed 4 weeks before Peterson was murdered.
Fingerprints don't lie, Commissioner.
Well, somebody is.
Have you ever heard of living surgery, Commissioner?
Look, Cranston, Professor Wallace told me all about that business of grafting arms and legs from one person to another. He says it's the bunk.
Still doesn't believe it, eh?
Of course not.
Tell me, Commissioner, since Gondo's death, has Professor Wallace asked you to have the police guard removed?
Yes, he just called about an hour ago and said he wouldn't need them anymore.
And you called him off?
Certainly. Why shouldn't I?
Because, Commissioner, I have reason to believe that the murderer will strike again tonight.
Well, Mr. Cranston, Miss Lane, you've searched my apartment and laboratory from one end to the other. You satisfied now there's no one lurking here?
Satisfied isn't the word. I'm relieved.
Well, surely, since Gondo's dead, Mr. Cranston, there's nothing for me to fear.
Well, don't forget that Mrs. Dorner, the wardrobe mistress, was killed after Gondo. Yeah. And by the same murderer. I can't help admiring your bravery, Professor Wallace.
But aren't you overlooking the facts?
Yes, that is quite true.
In the mind of this monster, the hypnotic thought may still be implanted to murder you.
Yes, that's very true, Mr. Cranston. Well, in that event, is there anything else here in my apartment you'd care to examine? Any place where the killer may be hiding?
Well, come to think of it, I did notice a fire escape off one of the back rooms. Do you mind if I look it over?
No, please go right ahead.
Now, wait here, Margot. I'll be back in a few minutes.
All right, Lamont. Don't be gone too long.
I won't.
That's a very clever young man, Miss Lane. Very clever.
Well, he has a way of tracking down a criminal, no matter how brilliant or how cunning.
Yes, I suspected as much. You'll pardon me, Miss Lane, but I've been looking at your hands. You're a musician, aren't you?
Well, I play the piano after a fashion.
Just after a fashion? Well, that's too bad. With your hands, you should play magnificently.
Yes, well, thank you.
And don't thank me yet.
What do you mean?
I'm going to give you the name of a very fine piano teacher. See, I think I have his card right here on the desk. I'm sure I have it someplace. Hello, look at this.
Well, what a strange-looking bottle. It's carved jade, isn't it?
Yes, I picked it up in my travels in the Orient. Contains a very rare and exotic perfume. I've forgotten all about it. It must have been in the drawer here. Here. It's yours.
Oh, no, I couldn't accept
it. Oh, please, I insist. I haven't any use for it. You may find it very interesting.
Well, nice. Thank you very much.
Smell it. It has a very delicate, very wonderful scent.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
I neglected to tell you, my dear Miss Lane, that it is a powerful hypnotic drug as well. Now, Miss Lane, you're going to aid me. Yes, aid me to get rid of your friend Lamont Cranston. Now listen to me and obey. You must obey every command.
Yes. Yes, I must obey.
Look, the drug is working well. Now to release my killer. See, I press the button and the panel slides open. Your clever friend Cranston overlooked that when he searched this apartment. Bartolini, come. I have another little job for you.
I hear you. Master.
Good. Now for the final ironical touch, the final sardonic gesture. Miss Lane, you will send this monster after Lamont Cranston.
No.
You will command him to destroy him.
No.
Command him?
You will go to the fire escape.
Yes. Yes.
You will find a knife in your hand.
Yes, the knife.
Then you will... You will...
Kill him.
You will kill him.
Good. Hear your orders, Bartolini?
I hear.
Then carry them out.
Yes, master.
Do you think you could escape punishment for your crimes, Professor Wallace?
What? Who said that?
The shadow, Professor Wallace. You can't see me because I've cast a hypnotic mist over your mind.
Shadow?
It was a brilliant plan of yours, Wallace, to accuse Gondo of the murders. To make it appear that he was the creator of this monster with the body of Bartolini and the arms of Knifer Williams when it was you. Then to make it look as if you were the target of the attack rather than the attacker.
And now you know, Shadow. I ordered my killer here to murder Gondo and Peterson and then Mrs. Dorner. Yes, my tracks are well covered, too.
Not well enough to deceive the Shadow.
Don't you understand, Shadow? You are to be the last link in the chain, the last one to die.
Professor Wallace, this is the end of your criminal career.
Let's drop this pretense, Mr. Cranston.
Cranston?
Yes, I can see you quite well. You forget that I, too, know something of hypnosis. You're my prisoner. You're going to die along with your friend Miss Lane here. All except her hands, which I shall use again.
So, just to be a contest between the power of darkness and light, Professor Watts.
And the dark shall win, Mr. Cranston. I'll make the first move in our mental chess game. Bartolini, grab her. Hold her.
Yes, Master.
Margo.
Master, I've got her.
Margo.
Make one move and she dies, Mr. Cranston. Up on the window ledge with her, Bartolini.
Yes, Master.
You see how helpless you are, Shadow? One move from you and I'll order Bartolini to plunge from that window with her. 22 stories to the street.
Bartolini, come down from that ledge. There's a cloud over your mind. This man is evil. He has made you do evil things.
Who's... Speaks to me.
I speak to you, your master. I command you to hear only my voice.
Yes.
Obey only my commands.
Yes.
Bartolini,
yes.
Listen to me. You are a man, not a slave. I speak to the man, Bartolini. Not to the monster created by Professor Wallace.
Bartolini.
Rebel. Rebel against him.
Yes. Yes, I will try.
No. You cannot disobey me.
I will help you, Bartolini. Come down from that ledge.
Yes.
Put Miss Lane down safely.
Yes. I must fight.
No, Bartolini.
Yes, I will put her down safely, Shadow.
Bartolini! I have broken your power over his mind, Wallace. The power of good wind.
Not yet, Shadow. You may control his mind, but the hands of Knifer Williams will act for me. Bartolini, the knife. The knife in the hands of the Knifer. Kill the Shadow. You can see him. Throw your knife.
Yes, a knife in my hands. But these are not my hands. They feel strange to me.
Kill him,
as if they had a life of their own.
Kill him. The Shadow can be seen by you.
I can't see anything but you. You! You taught me to use these hands to kill. Now I use them to kill you.
No, no, no. Don't throw that knife.
Stop, Bartolini.
No! I've killed him. His hands have killed him.
Bartolini, listen to me.
No. I have no control over them. They don't belong to me. They're killer's hands. I must get away. I am Bartolini, the great trapeze artist.
Bartolini,
I can escape.
Stay away from that ledge.
Escape. Escape.
Look out.
Escape.
Just 22 stories above the street.
Escape. Bartolini.
The phenomenon called life is a delicate balance. To tamper with that balance is to upset it, and to upset it is to create a monster. This was the story of a scientist who walked a road no mortal man dare travel.
The Shadow program is based on a story copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Somewhere off the east coast of the United States, a ship is creeping forward in darkness. And with good reason. Like assassins in the night, enemy submarines stalk the merchant ships and close in for the kill.
All the torpedo tubes ready. Stand by to fire on order.
Ach, Himmel, what's this? Coast Guard approaching. Dive. Dive, you hear me? United States Coast Guard ship is almost over us. We're trapped.
United States Coast Guard patrol reporting. Sighted submarine. Submarine sunk.
The United States Coast Guard packs a deadly wallop, and the Axis knows it. Like to take a good crack at the Axis yourself? Then join the Coast Guard. You'll have plenty of action, plenty of thrills, and the sure knowledge that you're doing your bit for your country and the front lines of defense. If you are qualified as a machinist, carpenter, cook, or yeoman, you may get immediate petty officer rating. See your nearest Coast Guard recruiting station right away. Teach the Axis that for nations, justice for men...
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, your friendly blue coal dealer brings you another strange and thrilling adventure in the Shadow's daring battle against the forces of evil. Be sure to listen, and be sure to phone your neighborhood blue coal dealer for greater heating comfort at less cost. Remember, keep the home fires burning with blue coal. This story was produced by the DL&W Coal Company, distributors of blue coal.
All right, that is The Shadow. I thought it was really interesting at the end of that program. They did a whole dramatized sort of commercial for, seeking people to join the Coast Guard.
Right.
You know, this was 1942. We had just entered the war a couple of months prior. This is February 22nd, 1942. We entered the war December 7th, 1941. So just a few months later, and here was the Shadow producers and the radio series doing their part to enlist men and women into the exciting war effort.
Coast Guard.
You know, knock the Axis out, you know, get into the war. And it's great. I mean, you know, we guess what? We did. We won the war. And because many of these radio shows, a lot of the comedians too, Jack Benny, Eddie Cantor, Bob Hope, of course. I mean, Bob Hope went everywhere for the war. Nobody did more than Bob Hope, really, for the war effort. to keep morale up and to get people to fight and to, you know, really kind of sacrifice, you know, with rubber and with steel. And I mean, you know, it was such a huge effort. But I thought this was really interesting at the end of this episode. This is called Death Gives an Encore, starring Bill Johnstone along with Marjorie Anderson on The Shadow. We do have a winner that guessed my song, and we'll play it in just a few minutes. WGN Radio Theater, we're here till 2 a.m., playing all your favorite classic radio shows. In our next hour, it's Fort Laramie, good adult western starring Raymond Burr. And then Raymond Burr uses his voice talents to star in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense in hour 3. So a lot more classic radio coming your way. Well, we did have a winner for my song. They guessed my favorite song from 1973, and here it is.
This is another long intro, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
He wanted to be you.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on.
I always had like this a crush on my teachers, and this song was sort of like that, you know, for me.
This is like I don't know what you call
it. I had like I had a disco ball in my basement.
This is kind of a sexy song.
This is a stalking song, isn't it?
Is it a stalking song?
Well, nowadays.
I'm somewhat of a stalker.
I imagine this being the song that was playing when the Italian horn was given away.
Yeah, here you go.
Here you go. In the basement.
Yeah.
In the dark.
Let me tell you, that basement.
If walls could talk, right? Yeah.
Some of those, some of the furniture in the Smithsonian now.
Right.
By the way, hello. By the way, this was one of the numbers in the hat. So you're lucky the wife didn't pull this one.
You're lucky.
Because Sarah's in there shaking her head. She's just shaking her head at all this. She's like, oh my gosh.
You guys are crazy.
I'm so happy that I only have to produce this show.
Once in a blue moon. I don't know.
When I had to even
pull the songs, I was just like, of course, this is Carl's song.
Me and Mrs. Jones. I always had crushes on my teachers, like every year, pretty much. I didn't have a teacher. What school did you go to that you had
teachers that cute every
like that,
year?
Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, East Leiden High School had a major, I'm not going to say the name, I have a major crush on my geometry teacher.
So East Leiden High School has the hot.
She was beautiful. Oh, my gosh. She was only maybe 10 years older than me.
Rod, your age really doesn't matter now, does it?
I'm just taking a moment.
She was the nicest teacher. She was absolutely beautiful.
I'm sure that's what you were attracted to, how nice she was.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
Very important. She's nice. Yeah, so this song sort of reminded me of that.
Great.
Yeah.
Good.
Her name was not Mrs. Jones, though.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. That's more than we need to know.
Our three winners. And so next week, Roger, I guess it's more homework for you.
Oh, man, this is getting harder.
This is a lot of pressure.
1974 will be next week.
Let me know you guys hit like the 80s or the 90s.
Yeah.
And then we're going to add Mike in as well.
There you go.
Mike, what year were
you
born?
There.
79.
All right. Well, I've got a few more weeks.
Cassara, what year were you born?
95.
Oh, it's going to be a while.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys got some time. Probably next year. Let me know. I'll come on back.
All right, we are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. And I am your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. Mike Estella, our executive producer, is here. And he had a birthday last week, too.
Yeah.
21. Right?
No, that's Cassara.
I know, Cassara. I couldn't believe it.
Cassara's turning 22 on Saturday.
I have kids older than Cassara.
Yeah, I'm super young.
She's super young and super skilled.
And you know what?
It's a good combination.
I have so much respect for you. She's a DJ. She works here. She's been working for how long? You've been working like what? How many years have you been working?
I started working overall when I was 16.
16. I love it. I absolutely love that. Fantastic. Someday you're going to hire me.
Thank you.
I hope
and
so.
And she picks great
music.
I want
to work for you.
What else could you ask for?
You.
And we love her.
I want to work for you someday when you're running a multi-gazillion dollar company.
That's the ultimate goal. I'll bring you in and you can tell jokes.
Let me tell you something. Just remember.
Oh, no.
Because Sarah, just remember that I said this because it's going to come true and I'm going to need a job someday.
Okay.
So, you know.
Gotcha.
Okay, but you.
I mean, I archive the show so that I can just go back and pull the audio. Like, hey, Carl said back in the day.
But on the other side, if he offers you a job, don't take it.
Yeah, no. You don't want to work for me.
That's for sure.
I'm cheap.
Got it.
And I work you really hard.
And you'll just be stuck with him forever.
Yeah. I'm like a wart.
He's like Jack Benny.
A wart.
You can't burn off. You know?
Wow.
Kind of. Like a hairy one.
A hairy wart.
A hairy wart. Yeah.
Ew.
With that wonderful thought, we have a good Western adventure. They had hairy warts back in the Western days, too. They couldn't burn off either.
Hairy warts.
Yeah, this is Raymond Burr stars in an episode of Fort Laramie. Should I do one of these?
No,
that's not needed.
All right.
Not for hairy warts.
And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series Sea Oak about a woman who comes back from the dead to get the life she never had. Intriguing.
Wow.
And the winner gets a Twilight Zone 4-CD set.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Alex in Fatal Attraction.
I want this child. It has nothing to do with you. I want it whether you're going to be a part of it or not.
Oh, man. One of the creepiest movies I've ever seen. 312-981-7200. Who is that wonderful actress?
Welcome back to our birthday edition of the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I want this child. It has nothing to do with you. I want it whether you're going to be a part of it or not.
And we've got Jill on the line. Hi, Jill.
Hi, good evening.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, thank you so much. Thank you. We're glad you called in. And who is that actress?
That's Glenn Close.
Glenn Close. What an amazing actress she is and was and will be.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are a winner, Jill. You've won a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set produced by Carl, so you know it's got to be the best. And it's hosted by Stacey Keach, and we know that you're going to love it.
Oh, I know I will. I'm looking forward to listening to it.
Perfect. Thank you. Take care.
Jill. Thank you very much. All right. We'll have another chance to win some Twilight Zone CDs in hour three. It is time now. Well, it's actually Monday, so happy Monday, everybody. Thanks for staying up late with us. It is time now for a good adult Western on Fort Laramie. This show came to CBS for one season in 1956. And it starred Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, captain of the U.S. Cavalry. It was produced by the same guy who produced Gunsmoke, Norman McDonald. And it depicted life at Fort Laramie in the mid-1800s. Now, the fort was located across the North Platte River from the town of Laramie at the mouth of the Laramie River. It starred Raymond Burr along with Vic Perrin, Harry Bartell, Howard McNair, Sam Edwards, John Daner. Great series. I think you're going to really like this. And then Raymond Burr, a little later, stars in Suspense. I thought it would be, you know, kind of fun have Raymond Burr in his own show and then starring on Suspense. Yeah?
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, I'm glad you agree, Lisa. Well,
yeah.
Those dimples are getting bigger and bigger. I'm telling you that right now. Yeah, why?
Because somebody texted and they wanted to know why everybody is speaking so fast.
We're speaking fast?
So we should relax.
I don't think we're speaking fast at all.
I don't think we are either.
Cake, sugar. That's what I blame.
Yeah, could be.
All right, let's just blame it on the birthday.
Hey, let's play some of those slow songs again.
Yeah.
Slow it all down
some
now,
Midnight
you know?
Train to Georgia.
Yeah. All right, let's tune this in. Let's go back to May 6, 1956. This is called Never the Twain. Here's Raymond Burr starring on Fort Laramie.
Thank you.
Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Lieutenant Seibert's reporting is ordered, Captain.
Oh, yes, Mr. Seibert. I have a special detail for you.
Yes, sir?
We've received a report there's a band of Brule Sioux camped in the North Fork near White Butte. I want you to ride out and see what they're up to.
Yes, sir.
They're too close to the Bozeman Trail. Better take a scout with you. I suggest Dan Tolliver.
I'd prefer Pete Hazen, sir.
Oh? Why?
I don't care for Tolliver.
He's the best scout on the post.
He's a squaw man.
You've still got a lot to learn about the West, Mr. Seibert. I suggest you might find old Dan Tolliver a very valuable teacher.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sirree, son. I come out to these parts when I was a lot younger than you. Mighty lot younger. Nothing on my cheek but peach fuzz.
Must have been rugged in those days.
Rugged? Why, son, there weren't a town or village twixt St. Joe on the Missouri and Monterey on the Pacific. Man had room to breathe. Now look at it. Immigrants pushing west every year, filling the plains with dust and damnation. I can't say I blame the Indians for being a mite put out about it.
I'd expect you to look at it their way.
What are you signifying by that, son?
Well, I understand you've been closer to the Indians than some of us.
Well, so I have, in a manner of speaking. Lived amongst them off and on for many a year. Fine people. Decent people.
I saw how decent they were up on the Powder River. Man doesn't look very pretty after they've been decent to him.
What part of the states you call home, son?
Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Well, how'd you feel if all of a sudden a lot of people start crowding into your hometown? Moving on to the streets you live in. Moving right square into your house, maybe. What'd you do?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. You'd throw them out, that's what. Well, this whole prairie belongs to the Indian. Yes, sir, it's his home. And he feels about it just the same way as you do about your home.
It isn't the same thing.
Well, it might seem the same to an Indian.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, wait a minute.
What is it?
Indian.
Where?
Down there in that draw.
Oh, yeah. Hey, his horse is bucking.
Yeah.
Look.
Well, first time I ever know an Indian to get thrown off his horse. Let's go. Come on. Hey. Rattlesnake.
He's going to strike. That's why her horse threw her.
Well, that snake ain't going to be much use no more.
Better get a tourniquet on that leg before the poison starts moving.
Well, you could use your revolver, Lanyard.
Oh, sure. Tell her not to be afraid. Tell her we'll take care of her.
I understand you.
Oh, well. It's got the blood stopped. Now, I'm going to have to cut your leg so I can suck out the poison. I'll try not to hurt you.
She's fainted.
That's just as well. I had to make sure to get all that poison out.
That Indian blood tastes any different from regular blood?
What are you talking about? Blood's blood.
That's what I've been talking about.
Help me get her over to my horse.
Where are you taking her?
Back to the fort.
Well, you think that's smart?
We can't leave her out here. She needs a doctor's care.
Well, we could try to find her people's camp.
And leave her with them to die of blood poisoning?
She's only an Indian, son.
All right, Tolliver, that's enough. Let's get our horses. It's a long ride back to the fort.
What you've done may have serious consequences, Mr. Syberts.
What else could I do, sir?
Do look, from the Indians' point of view, you've kidnapped one of their women.
Well, I suggested we ought to find her village captain, but the lieutenant said bring her here.
We can only hope they didn't see you.
And that's doubtful. Her pony bolted, and when it gets back to camp without her, there'll be a devil to pay. She ain't no ordinary squaw.
What do you mean? By the look of her clothes and the way she wears her hair, she could be the daughter of a chief. Lieutenant Syberts, we're here to keep the peace, not to commit overt acts of hostility.
It was only an act of simple Christian charity.
Lieutenant, you'll form a detail at once and return that girl to her people.
But, sir, the doctor says she's got to stay in bed for at least a couple of days.
Corporal of the guard, sir.
Well?
Post number 3 reports a party of Indians riding toward the main gate.
How many?
50 or 60 of them, sir.
What do you think, Dan?
My guess is to come to parley.
Hope you're right.
Let's see what they want.
Suppose that's the chief riding in alone.
It's Spotted Tail. He's always been friendly.
Well, he ain't dressed up friendly today, Captain. Every scalp he ever took dangling in his belt.
Shall I fall in the company, Captain?
Don't move, Syberts. Greetings, friend. The soldiers of the Great White Father are honored by the visit of the mighty Spotted Tail.
The soldiers of the Great White Father say one thing. Do another. Say want peace. Steal land. Shoot buffalo. Call it peace. Now steal Indian woman. Steal daughter of Spotted Tail.
Your daughter was not stolen, Spotted Tail. She was hurt. This officer brought her here so the doctor could help her.
Where is Awapa? My daughter.
She is in the hospital. I'll take you to her.
It's true, my father. White soldier, help me.
Why? Why, enemy of Indian, save Indian life?
We do not want to be your enemy, Spotted Tail. We want peace.
I hear this many times before.
I'm sorry, Captain, but you'll have to go now.
Come, Spotted Tail. Ahuapa must rest.
Not leave. Daughter belong to her people. I take.
But she can't be moved.
I move.
No, my father. I do as white doctor say.
You come to the lodge of your father.
Captain, I can't be responsible.
Spotted Tail, hear me. Ahuapa will live. She will be well in a few days. If you move her now, she may die.
So medicine man make my daughter well.
Spotted Tail, you can pitch your lodge outside the fort until Ahuapa is well again. You can see her every day.
Spotted Tail, not agency Indian, is warrior, must hunt.
You can hunt around here. There's plenty of game.
White soldier, keep daughter of Spotted Tail in prison.
My father, wise chief. He know this no prison, is hospital. These no enemy, they friend. Ahuapa here. Ahuapa stay here.
Aye, then. Be it so.
Well, Mr. Syberts, your little adventure didn't turn out so badly after all.
No, sir.
But I don't advocate rescuing Indian maidens in distress as a substitute for military duties.
No, sir, only...
Only what?
Had the captain been in my place, I feel sure he would have done the same thing.
Oh?
Yes, sir.
Maybe so. She's a spunky little baggage. You, going over to the quarters?
As a matter of fact, sir, I thought maybe I'd drop in at the hospital here.
I see. Well, good luck, Mr. Syberts.
Thank you, sir. Morning, Doctor.
Oh, Lieutenant Syberts.
How's your patient this morning?
Well, now, I have more than one, Lieutenant.
How is she?
Well, now, by a curious coincidence, she was inquiring about you this morning.
About me?
Yes. She asked me to send for you.
Why?
Now, why didn't you ask her? He's quite well enough to talk to now.
Thanks, Doctor. Morning, ma'am.
Now is good.
You feeling better?
A pain all gone.
That's fine.
Ahoapa, oh life to Lieutenant. Ahoapa, belong, Lieutenant.
I beg your pardon?
How else Ahoapa show thanks?
By getting well quickly.
Is not enough.
It's all the thanks I need.
It's strange.
What is strange, Ahuapa?
White man? Indian? Both men. White men think different.
That's because we've been taught differently.
Ahuapa like way white man think. You teach Ahuapa think this way?
That's quite a large order.
But you do. First you teach Ahuapa speak white man tongue.
You speak English very well.
Not good, Ahuapa think. You teach better.
I'll be glad to try.
Good. You begin now.
I don't know where to begin.
How does Lieutenant call himself? Ni Ahuapa. What Lieutenant?
Oh, my name is Syberts, Richard Syberts.
Richard. Good. See? Ahuapa learn first important English word.
All right, that's the first portion of Fort Laramie with Never the Twain, starring Raymond Burr from 1956.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back to the show, and we're tuning in to Fort Laramie with Raymond Burr. Also in this cast, I mean, listen to the quality of actors they had on this. Don Diamond, John Daner, Lillian Abayoff, Ralph Moody, and, of course, Raymond Burr as the star. So a good quality. You know, this was 1956, Lisa. There wasn't a lot of dramatized radio left. So these guys and gals are like, hey, we're still around, you know, cast us. I mean, it started to wane in the early to mid 1950s. So there wasn't a lot of dramatic radio still on in late 56. I mean, although there were still some classic radio on into the early 60s, it was already making its way out because TV was just taking over. It was like the newfangled thing. Everybody was getting a television set, and they were abandoning radio. And that's why we do what we do, because this was, you know, 30-plus years, in my mind, of the best entertainment that was ever created, because it was for the theater of the mind, and that is a very powerful muscle. That theater of the mind, you know, anything is possible in the theater. It's boundless. So, you know, they have these pictures in your mind. You can't do it on television. Can't do it on a movie theater. When you're listening to these shows, there's nothing like it. So I hope you're enjoying it. Let's get back now to Fort Laramie.
Mr. Syberts?
Sir?
Mrs. Syberts, I may be mistaken, but I don't believe I saw any change in the order of the day.
I beg pardon, sir?
Since when have sash and plume been indicated as proper dress for the officer in charge of guard mount?
Oh, well, it isn't, sir, but I thought it might be good for the morale.
The morale of whom?
Why, the men, sir, naturally.
How's that, Lieutenant?
Well, sir, it also occurred to me that it might make a good impression on the Indians around the post. They put a lot of stock in their own headdresses and ceremonial regalia. I thought it might be a good idea to show them what our dress uniform looks like.
Lieutenant Syberts, the only Indian who witnessed this guard mount was Ahuapa.
I'd noticed that, sir.
And had you noticed that each time you are the officer of the day, she is here on the parade ground to watch you change the guard?
Oh, sir, I guess she's interested in soldiers, sir.
Soldiers? Or a certain soldier?
I wouldn't know, sir.
I believe you're off duty now.
Yes, sir?
Then, Lieutenant, I suggest you shouldn't keep the lady waiting.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. It always makes me a little sad to see such a sunset. So beautiful.
My people say they not wish to die. And each evening, Great Spirit must fight with it until it died bloody death. And only when it scalped will night come. Warrior may sleep, gain strength to meet new day.
My people say the sun is a handsome god who rides across the sky in a golden chariot, forever chasing the beautiful goddess who is the moon.
And does he ever catch her?
Never.
A sad story. He should catch her.
He can't. For he belongs to the day and she to the night.
But if he did catch her, what would happen?
Who knows? So great is their love, perhaps the heavens would burst into blinding flame, consuming everything.
Oh, yes. But he would have caught her.
Yes, he would have caught her.
He gone now, your handsome sun god. Gone over edge of world. Great Spirit has killed him.
Oh, no. He's not dead. Look over in the east. The moon goddess comes following after him.
Richard?
Yes?
I am that moon goddess. You are that god of sun. And I follow you. Always. And never, never may I catch you.
No. No, I won't run away over the edge of the world like the sun. I'll stay here with you. Always. Always.
You're not afraid of blinding flame that consume everything?
I'm not afraid.
Then I'm not afraid.
Good evening, Lieutenant Syberts.
Hello, Piney.
You want a little rye?
No, thanks. I'm looking for Captain Quince. Has he been in?
No, I haven't seen him all evening.
Well, well, well. Hello there, son.
Hello, Dan.
How about you and me having a little drink?
No, thanks.
Oh, come on now. That ain't very sociable. Seems how you and me got a lot in common.
What do you mean?
Oh, you know what I mean.
If you'll pardon me, Mr.
Tolliver. We'll let you hurry, son.
I'm sorry.
Oh, now, wait now. Nothing like a pretty little squaw to change a man's mind about Indians, is there, son?
You filthy, my dear.
Oh, now, son, my... now, wait. There's no cause to get your dander up. I was just a... Oh. Okay.
Now, what's this all about?
Captain Quince, you ought to take better care of this young man of yours. He seems mighty touchy.
Mr. Sabert, you're aware of the regulations covering the conduct of officers in uniform?
Yes, sir, only...
You'll consider yourself confined to quarters until further notice.
Yes, sir.
Captain Quince reporting, sir.
Good morning, Lee. I hear you refereed a little scuffle over at the Sutler's last night.
Yes, sir.
One of our officers fighting a civilian.
Well, Major Daggett, as far as I can see, he was provoked.
Did Dan Tolliver attack him?
No, sir. Tolliver was taunting him about the Indian girl.
Seibert's in love with her?
Apparently.
Well, his love affair will have to wait. We've got more important things to worry about. That's why I sent for you.
Yes, sir.
Just got a dispatch from Fort Kearney. Some idiot Kansas militia outfit attacked a Cheyenne village last week.
But we have a treaty. We're at peace with the Cheyenne.
Apparently it didn't mean a thing to those brave civilian soldiers. They attacked without warning or provocation. Massacred every man, woman, and child in the village. Come in.
I beg pardon, sir.
Yes, Sergeant. What is it?
The Indians have pulled out. They was there last night, but this morning there ain't a single teepee down by the river. Just a couple of stray dogs.
They got the news quicker than we did.
They always do.
A party of Cheyenne is killed and the Sioux take to the warpath. We may have a general uprising on our hands. Have your company ready to move out in half an hour, Captain.
Yes, sir.
It's not good for daughter of chief to be tied like prisoner.
It's not good for daughter of chief to refuse to follow her people to war.
We are now many marches from white man. Untie me now. I shall stay with my people.
It is good. You will get well in your mind now. The white man medicine make your body well, but your mind sick. You will be well now.
There is much good about white man.
He killed our people.
Not white man at Fort Laramie. It was others. And it was not our people who were killed. It was the Cheyenne. We at peace with white man at Fort Laramie.
White man is white man. Indian is Indian.
And soon white man will kill us all if we not make peace with him.
Then we will die brave in battle, not drunk on reservation.
You will. Warrior will. But what of women? What of me?
For many moon, Dark Elk won you for his wife. Marry him and have many babies.
I will remain with my people as long as I live. That I promise. But I will never marry Dark Elk or any other Indian.
Another glass of punch, Major? Captain Quinn?
Thank you, Mrs. Davenport. On Christmas Eve? Why not? Thank you. Well, Merry Christmas, Lee.
Merry Christmas, Major.
Hey, where's young Syberts? Thought the doctor was letting him out of the hospital at last.
He'll be along presently. Major, I've a suggestion to make, if I may.
Sure, go ahead, Lee.
This has been a bad winter so far. It looks like it's going to be worse. The Indians are, well, they're bound to feel it. Game is scarce. They haven't the advantages of the treaty supplies we were furnishing them before they took the warpath.
What's your suggestion, Lee?
Call them in for a peace parley as soon as the snows melt, say April 1st. Maybe we can end this useless bloodshed.
Maybe, but I don't think they'll come.
Why not?
After that massacre in Kansas last summer, they won't forget. I can't say as I blame them.
Worth a try, isn't it, sir?
Certainly. Anything's worth a try.
Good evening, sir.
Evening.
Oh, Lieutenant, how's the arm?
Doctor says it's going to be all right, sir.
Lucky you didn't lose it. You should have seen it, Major. Arrow cracked the bone, pinned his arm against his side. It's a miracle he's alive.
I know. Those were Spotted Tails warriors, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
Any idea who got you?
Yes, sir. A warrior named Dark Elk. He was after my scalp. I shot him.
That change your opinion of Indians, Lieutenant?
No, sir. They're a fine race of people, sir.
Come in.
Beg pardon, sir.
Yes, Lieutenant. What is it?
Party of Indians approaching the post, sir.
War party?
No, sir. Women and children along with the braves.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a peace parley after all. Let's go out and meet them. Oh, where's Captain Quince?
Right outside, sir.
Major, it's Spotted Tail.
I see it is.
Greetings, soldiers of the great white father.
Greetings, brave Spotted Tail.
I come in peace and in sorrow.
What sorrows, the mighty chief of the Sioux?
My daughter, Aoapa, has gone beyond the sunset to join the Great Spirit.
She's dead?
The soldiers of the Great White Father join in the sorrow of Spotted Tail.
The winter was long and cold. There was little to eat. A fever came to Aoapa and would not leave her until, alas, she left me forever. But before she fell into long sleep, she asked two favors. One I can grant. The other I must ask of you.
And what are those favors, Spotted Tail?
She asked me to make peace with a white man. I have come to make peace.
It is good, Spotted Tail. And what is the favor you must ask of me?
Aoapa, love white man. Aoapa, say if she cannot be with white man in life, then she wish to be with him in death. Aoapa, ask to be buried at Fort Laramie.
It shall be done. Captain Quince?
Yes, sir?
Would you be good enough to assign a funeral detail? Full military honors.
Yes, sir. Lieutenant Syberts? Lieutenant Syberts!
Sir.
Take charge of the detail.
Yes, sir.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by William N. Robeson, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Jack Moyles, Lillian Bayef, Ralph Moody, John Daner, John Stevenson, and Don Diamond.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry. Each Monday through Friday evening, CBS Radio rings you in on the fabulous adventures of insurance investigator Johnny Dollar. Just by decoding the cryptic items in his expense account, you'll learn how a dime spent in a phone booth can lead to a scene of the wildest suspense. Then on to a sum spent for an airplane ticket, or an item for a new shoelace, and again you'll find yourself smack in the middle of a thrill-packed situation. Each new adventure moves the story forward to its dramatic payoff, when Johnny Dollar solves yet another case of arson, fraud, or murder. Every Monday through Friday night, over most of these same stations, hear yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
All right, that is Fort Laramie, broadcast from May 6, 1956, called Never the Twain, starring the very deep voice, Raymond Burr. He played Ironside on television, and he was, of course, Perry Mason. And you're going to hear a great episode of Suspense starring Raymond Burr in our hour three at 2 o'clock, at 1 o'clock in the morning when we get there. Yeah, we're off the air at 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
We are. Yeah. But you could stay and hang out if you want to and listen to Nick.
Well,
I usually listen to him on my drive home.
I listen to him as I'm driving, of course. I don't miss Nick DiGilio's show, never.
Do you listen to the whole thing? I mean, you're up till 5?
No, because I get home about 3:30.
Right.
And then I have it on when I'm getting ready for bed and everything. But I listen as long as I can.
Right.
But then, you know, hey, I am a human. I have to go to bed at some point.
That's for sure.
You know, I was thinking, while I was playing this classic radio show, I was thinking about years and years ago being on this radio station with Eddie Schwartz. I used to come here maybe – it wasn't here, though, actually. It was at Bradley Place.
Yeah.
And I used to come to that studio maybe 4 or 5 times a year. Eddie would have me on, and we'd spend – he'd come on, I think, at 11 o'clock at night, and he'd be on till – he was the late-night guy, you know. And he would play these classic radio shows. And then Floyd Brown – do you remember that name? Do you remember the name Floyd Brown?
Yeah, we've talked about him.
He is a legend, just a radio legend, Floyd Brown. He was on this station, and for a half an hour, I believe, on every Sunday night from – I think it was from 8:30 to 9 or 8 to 8:30, something like that, he would play a classic radio show on this station, WGN. So there's been classic radio shows on this station for years. I mean, all the way back to the Floyd Brown days and to the days when I would be on with Eddie Schwartz. And I think Eddie used to have Chuck Shaden on before me. You know, he started with Chuck Shaden probably in the 70s or 80s playing these classic radio shows. This is just a perfect station for the golden age of radio because these shows, it works great because this is a talk entertainment station. It has a signal all across the country and into Canada. And what better format and forum to play these radio shows than WGN?
I
just love it.
Carrying on the tradition.
Yeah. Love coming here on Saturday and Sunday nights, playing all your favorite classic radio shows. Lisa and I, we're here every Saturday and Sunday till 2 a.m., start at 11 p.m., and this is the WGN Radio Theater. We have a Facebook page. You can go to Facebook and just search WGN Radio Theater. And we have a website for this show as well, WGNRadioTheater.com. Little Huey Lewis. And the news way before Sarah's time, but right about the right time for me.
You know this song.
She knows her music.
Oh, I know.
This is her business.
I used to love listening to Huey Lewis in the news.
And when I need to hire a DJ, I'm not even going to think twice about it.
Of course.
I actually mentioned to my husband because he is very involved in Buffalo Grove Rotary, and they have a lot of entertainment events from time to time. So I hope that we'll be able to call you.
Let's plug your DJ. Folks, if you need a DJ, we have the right DJ for you. She has all kinds of music, anything. She could do bar mitzvahs. She does weddings.
Why don't you let her tell him what she can do?
No, it's always better to build her up, right?
Well, yeah. She knows more about her business than you do.
Okay.
I mean, he's doing pretty well, though. He was on a good track.
She's super smart. She's super talented.
Thank you.
She's got a great personality.
Thank you.
I love her chutzpah. She's got chutzpah, this girl.
Chutzpah.
I love it. And so tell us about your DJ service. And everyone out there, if you need a DJ, we've got the girl for you.
Right. So you can keep in touch with me. All my social media handles are DJ Cash Era. So DJ CASHERA. My official website is DJCashEra.com. And I release a new mix every week.
Wow.
So I just released a new mix this past Friday for 1994. And then befitting, since my birthday is this upcoming Saturday, I'll release a mix that highlights 1995 this upcoming Friday.
And we're going to catch up to you soon.
He's only 21 years of age. I just love it.
Yeah, I'll be 22 this Saturday.
All right. Well, make sure you hire DJ Cash because he'll do a great job for you. I know
Thank
that.
Thank you.
I know that.
She's a star.
I've got my lifelong DJ now whenever
there you
I
go.
Need to.
DJing last night, and I was really nervous. It was like my first time in a bar by myself, like the entire night. I had to DJ for 5 hours straight. It was packed.
Where were you?
We were at the Whistler up north on
the Whistler. That's a radio show. The Whistler is a radio show.
Yeah.
Where was it?
The Whistler. It's in I think that was Lincoln Park.
Oh, okay.
Up north on North Milwaukee.
Wow.
But I mean, it was way more packed than I expected. I had a lot of friends come out, and they said they had to stand in line for 30 minutes just to get in.
That's because they wanted to see you.
Yeah, it was packed.
Worth the wait.
Oh, yes.
So you have the two record players, and you're just like, bam, bam?
No, I actually use a controller.
Oh, so you have it all in one. Okay.
Yeah, easier to carry around. Very cool. But I know how to work with vinyl. I learned on vinyl first.
Yeah.
So I understand the.
Gotta love. I just love her. She's awesome.
Yeah, just I love her.
I love you guys too. Oh, it feels good to be here with you guys tonight.
Yeah. Big birthday coming up next Saturday, then, right?
Well yeah. I mean, we're still 22. Celebrating your birthday today, so. Yeah.
You know, every birthday is a big birthday.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lisa only does birthdays every other year. Well, that's why she's 26.
But I do appreciate the gifts every year.
There you go.
All right. In this hour, we have suspense. With Raymond Burr in the Country of the Blind, and it's all brought to you by our sponsor, Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series, Alex, Inc., about a radio journalist who decides to quit his job and start his own company.
Okay.
And the winner will get a Twilight Zone 4-CD set.
Nice. The number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor is best known for Scrubs, and he played Adrian Bloom in 2014's Wish I Was Here.
My father told me that I was officially a man at my bar mitzvah. So I told him that as a man, I wanted to have a bacon double cheeseburger.
All right, who is that great actor? 312-981-7200.
Welcome back to our birthday edition. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
My father told me that I was officially a man at my bar mitzvah. So I told him that as a man, I wanted to have a bacon double cheeseburger.
There you go. Let's talk to Ron. Hey, Ron, how are you?
How are you doing? I'm doing all right.
Good, good, good. Good to hear from you. Who is that actor?
It is Zach Braff.
Zach Braff is exactly right. And Carl owes me a dollar. And Ron, you're a winner. You won a Twilight Zone 4-CD set.
Hang on a second. I want to clarify this. Ron, I want to clarify this. I said if somebody gets this, that they will. I will give you a doll hair.
You said a dollar. And you know what? He thought that was a really tough one. Was that a tough one for you?
No, that was pretty easy.
See, that's what I said.
And there's an American Girl store right down the block. I'm going to go there, get a doll hair, and give it to you.
You owe me a dollar. And you, Ron, are a winner. You've won the Twilight Zone 4-CD set, which is really fantastic, if I do say so myself. Carl produces them, and Stacy Keats hosts them. And they are really exciting to listen to. So I hope you enjoy that.
I will. I can't wait for it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ron.
Take care.
Have a good night, Ron.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for staying up late with us. We appreciate you and all of our listeners. This is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. And after this, we're going home, but we'll be back here next Saturday. It goes fast, huh,
Lisa?
We're not
leaving yet.
It goes fast.
We still have 45 minutes.
No, I know that, but after this hour.
Oh, after this hour.
Go home. And
then we'll be back in like
we're
a
back
day
like,
or two.
Yeah, it seems like
we'll be back this week. We have a meeting.
Yeah, we have a meeting on Thursday.
We have a show meeting. All we're going to do is talk about Casera. I don't really know what else there is to talk about.
Yeah, and then we'll be back here next Saturday. Let's look at what we have next Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's interesting.
Yes.
We're going to do something very cool next weekend. You want to tell the listeners about it? Because
yeah.
It was your idea.
Well, yeah, we're going to do male detectives and female detectives. So we're going to split it up on Saturday night. We have male detectives. I don't know why we're doing the males first, but we'll do Boston Blackie, The Adventures of Nero Wolfe, My Great Grand Uncle, and Casey Crime Photographer. On Sunday, we're going to do their better half, which is female detectives. So we've got Philco Mysteries, Candy Matson, and Murder Clinic. I don't know Murder
Clinic.
Well,
Murder Clinic, you know, it was tough to find female detectives.
Yeah.
But there's, on the series Murder Clinic, there was one episode about a female detective.
Fantastic.
So that's what we're doing. Yeah. All right, so that'll be fun next week. But right now it is time for Suspense, one of the best mystery and drama series of all time. This particular episode is from October 27th, 1957. It's called The Country of the Blind, and it stars Raymond Burr in the very famous H.G. Wells story. Here it is, part one now of Suspense.
Suspense.
and the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
H.G. Wells was one of the most remarkable writers of this century. A storyteller whose tales are more than mere entertainment designed for a moment of escape. They linger on in memory, seducing one into that sometimes dangerous and risky practice of thinking. Such a story you are about to hear. A story with a shattering moral. A story we guarantee you will not soon forget. Listen. Listen then as Mr. Raymond Burr stars in The Country of the Blind by H.G. Wells, which begins in exactly 1 minute.
Memo on medals. Information about our military awards and decorations. The United States does not have any orders or ranking in the decorations it awards to Americans, as do other nations. For example, the English Order of the Garter is divided into several classes, depending on the rank of the recipient and the value of his services. Only one medal was granted by Congress in commemoration of a naval victory during the Revolutionary War. This was awarded to John Paul Jones, commander of the Bonhomme Richard, for his victory over the British frigate Seriphus on September 23, 1779. George Washington established the first military decoration in 1782, called the Badge for Military Merit. From it have come the Legion of Merit, the Purple Heart, and the Medal for Merit. Today, as in the past, medals represent a nation's effort to pay tribute to its heroes for their loyalty and unselfish devotion to duty.
And now, The Country of the Blind, starring Mr. Raymond Burr, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Once I had made my way across the Cordillera, I had to find Senor Cartwright if he was still alive. For it was he who had seen me last. That terrible night more than a year ago when I slipped and fell from a ledge 18,000 feet up the face of Mount Parascotopetl. It was a long and painful journey, but at last I arrived at the mine, high in the Andes above Quito, where Senor Cartwright was superintendent. I dragged my aching feet across the porch of his shack and tapped on the door.
Come in.
Senor Cartwright, is it you?
Yes. What do you want?
You do not know me, senor?
Why, no, you look like a man I knew once, but he
is dead. Dead on the slopes of Parascotopetl?
Nunez, the guide. Why, no, it couldn't be.
Nunez, the guide, si, senor. That is what I was called.
But you fell. I saw you fall.
Yes.
Why, it's unbelievable.
Perhaps the gods of the mountain had reason to spare me.
Nunez, if we'd had any idea, we would have...
I know. I do not blame you. You could not have reached me, and if you had, I should not have welcomed you, not at first, but later.
What do you mean?
Senor, you have heard the legend of the Country of the Blind?
Yes, something about a fertile valley high in the mountains which was cut off centuries ago by a great landslide. Yes, the people who lived there had developed a strange illness which slowly made them blind, and after that their children were born blind?
Yes.
But what has that got to do with...
It is no legend, senor. It is true.
What?
And you have heard the saying, in the country of the blind, a one-eyed man is king?
Yes.
That is not true, senor.
I'm afraid I don't follow you, Nunez. Suppose you begin at the beginning.
Very well. You remember that night on the face of the mountain?
I'll never forget it. Trapped on a ledge scarcely a yard wide, you, Williamson, and I. You had unfastened your safety rope and were trying to set up a shelter when you slipped.
Yes, I slipped and fell down. Down through the icy black night. I fell perhaps 1,000 feet before I felt the heavy, stinging impact of snow. I'd fallen onto an almost perpendicular slope, and then I was sliding, tumbling over and over, and under me, around me, an immense avalanche of snow was rumbling, sliding with me. I fell with the snow for what seemed minutes, every second expecting the terrible final impact. But the impact never came. Slowly, the avalanche subsided, flowing out upon a gentler slope, and finally, mercifully, I lost consciousness. When I awoke, it was morning. My clothes were torn. I was bruised and bleeding. I ached in every muscle, but I had not one single broken bone. I lay there and offered up a prayer of thanksgiving to the gods of the mountain. Far below me lay a lush valley, sparkling in the morning sunlight. I could see the stately trees and the green meadows, fresh with dew. And then I saw them. People, men and women, working in the fields. Two of them, who were quite close, failed to notice me as I approached until I shouted. Only then did they look up attentively in my direction. I waved wildly at them, but they took no notice. Why, the fools must be blind. Blind? Could it be that I had fallen into the country of the blind?
The second act of Suspense continues in 1 minute.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
You're worse than I are, understand?
Joe.
Yes, I am.
Joseph.
What?
Who is she?
Who's who?
Who were you dreaming about?
Was I dreaming?
You were talking in your sleep and giggling.
How about that?
What were you giggling about?
I can't remember.
Joseph, you mentioned a girl's name.
Oh? What name?
Spas.
Spas?
Yes, Spas. Candy Spas. It sounded like a dancer or a striptease or something.
Oh.
Oh, what?
Well, I must have said Candy Spots. Candy Spots is a horse. I bet on him once.
You bet on a horse?
Yeah, we had a pool. I could have won $3.
Well, you should have put the money into savings bonds. They're a much better investment.
It was only 50 cents.
For 63 cents a day, you can buy a $25 bond a month. And 1 year's worth of bonds will bring $300 when they mature. What's more, they're guaranteed to be winners. The whole United States stands behind them.
Uh-huh.
So don't waste money betting on horses. Put it in savings bonds.
Okay. Can I still dream about horses, though?
If you do it quietly. Say, why were you giggling about a horse?
Hey, you know who that is right there? That's Gladys.
Oh, Gladys.
That's Gladys.
The neighbor, the nosy neighbor.
Neighbor on Bewitched.
Of course.
Yeah.
Love
I'm trying to think,
Gladys.
God, I'm trying to think of her name now. But that's Gladys.
I do 100%. Like her.
All right, that's the first portion of Suspense with The Country of the Blind by H.G. Wells and starring Raymond Burr from 1957 on. Great quality episode of Suspense there. We'll have a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
A library in Oak Park was selling eclipse viewing glasses. Now the Better Business Bureau is warning buyers that could be unsafe. The glasses were sold for $1. They're now part of a recall.
You've got to know and trust who you're buying from and make certain that they're pre-approved glasses.
If you're trying to protect your eyesight from the sun,
yes,
it's going to cost you more than $1.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I tell you, this station has some great talent on it. I mean, Dave Plyer, I mean, last night I was listening to his show. He had the granddaughter, or was it the granddaughter or the daughter?
I thought it was her
daughter. Yeah, the daughter. Yeah, because he was 90-something years old. Had the daughter of one of the Three Stooges.
Yeah, I think it was Mo from
yeah.
The Three Stooges.
I mean, you know, he gets these people. It's unbelievable. I'm sure he's interviewed Jerry Lewis.
Oh,
I used to go to lunch and to dinner with Jerry. I don't think I ever recorded an interview with him, though. I wish I would have. We lost a legend yesterday in Jerry Lewis.
But you know what? You have the memories.
Yeah, well, I've told the story about when I first... See, he licensed me the radio and TV shows for a while. And I met with him, and I told the story on the air, and I was late for the first meeting.
Yep.
And he, you know, he was a busy guy, and he left me hanging.
Well, good for him.
I was 15 minutes late. But I tell you what, the next time I was like an hour and a half early for that meeting.
You know what? You learned a life lesson.
Jerry Lewis taught me a life lesson. Yep. Be early, because other people's time
is
very valuable.
Because on time is late.
That's right. So I'm always early. You know I am. I'm always early. I'm always here.
You just sleep
30
here.
Seconds or so before the show starts.
At least
always sleeps here. That's
I get here.
Carl.
Here's what happens sometimes. The traffic, you never know what's going on. This is a live radio show, so I give myself plenty of time to get down here. Normally it takes an hour and a half, so I leave like 2.5 hours.
Wow, that's really early.
Where are you driving from?
Barrington.
Timbuktu.
pretty much Egypt.
No, it takes like 90 minutes. So...
He lives too far.
Yeah, it's far. But I believe that he taught me, taught me a life lesson. You have to be on time, especially when you're meeting Jerry Lewis.
I think he's right.
So we are going to have a tribute to the great comedian and producer and entertainer. He did so much for muscular dystrophy. Oh my gosh.
Sure did.
I mean, he raised, I think, billions of dollars for muscular dystrophy. What a patriot, just an unbelievable entertainer, producer, actor, writer, oh my gosh, and a very fun guy to know. He was really a great guy that I could say, you know, I got to work with, and we will have a little a celebration of his life. We'll play some of his material, play a Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis show later in September.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Esmeralda. It is 1:34 in the morning, Lisa, and you know what that means.
We've
got 25 more minutes, and then, but it's raining out. So do you have an umbrella with you, Lisa, walking to your car?
I don't have an umbrella, but...
What are you going to do?
I'll just walk.
You don't want to melt in the swamp?
I don't care.
It's just water.
I don't really care that much.
Melting.
Yeah, my
so overly dramatic.
I know, isn't he?
I'll get you and your little dog too.
What
a great movie, huh?
It sure is.
Oh yeah, fantastic.
I love that movie. Now, you know, it's weird when you watch that movie now. I think Judy Garland's too old to play that part. She's like a teenager. I think the perfect person for that part would have been Shirley Temple.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's kind of sacrilegious to say that now, to think back. I mean, this movie is such a classic. But anytime I see it, it just looks like too old
to
play Dorothy.
Although it's hard to picture anybody else doing
that role.
But, I mean, she is.
Yeah, but
Dorothy.
Shirley Temple would have been amazing.
I'm sure she would have been different.
I wonder what happened. What do you think the deal was? I mean, Shirley Temple was.
Couldn't say. What do you think?
Yeah, why didn't Shirley do that part?
Movie,
you never saw
you
The
never
Wizard
saw...
of Oz?
No.
Whoa.
Things I've never seen.
Awkward silence.
The Wizard of Oz. So then you don't know what I'm talking about when I'm like.
She does.
I know the premise, and I've seen like clips
of
it. I've just never seen the entire.
I'll get you and your little dog too.
I know the reference of the witch.
Margaret Hamilton.
I've never seen it.
Yeah. She was great.
Oh yeah.
You know, Margaret Hamilton got severely burned.
Yes.
Doing that movie, there was fire and things, and some prop went wrong, and she got burned. These were the days when.
You know what? Things go wrong today too.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Cruise just got hurt.
Yeah, broke his ankle.
Yeah, it could have been worse. I saw a clip
Mission
of it.
Mission Impossible 68.
He was doing his own stunt.
That's why you don't do your own stunt.
I agree. Don't be such a martyr, right?
Yeah. No, definitely not.
If any producers out there want me to star in a movie, I'll do my own stunts.
Okay, well, you can do my stunts. How's that? You'd be my stunt man.
Yeah, mine too. Definitely, yeah.
All right.
I'm out on that one.
We are listening to Suspense, a good H.G. Wells story starring Raymond Burr. Let's get back now to the Country of the Blind on Suspense.
And now, we continue with Act 2 of The Country of the Blind, starring Mr. Raymond Burr. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The country of the blind. I had fallen into the country of the blind. As that realization came over me, I remembered the words, "In the country of the blind, the one-eyed man is king." I walked toward the men, and I spoke to them. Hello. Oh, hello there.
Who is this man? Or is he a spirit come down from the rocks?
Oh, I'm a man, all right, just like you. But I've had a miraculous escape. And now I find myself here in your valley.
Valley? What is valley? Come hither. Let me feel of you.
Certainly. Here, my arm, my face. You see, I'm indeed a man like yourself. My lips move with speech. You feel... Here, careful there. Careful, gently on the eyes.
Eyes? What are eyes? This is strange. Feel this, Korea.
Yes. He is imperfectly formed. Some strange bulge there. Unseemly.
Oh, your eyes are shrunken in, but mine are whole. I can see.
See? Pedro, he is a strange, wild one. I wonder where he comes from.
Down out of the rock?
No. No. Over the mountains, out of the country beyond there, where men can see. From Bogota, where there are 100,000 people, and the city stretches out of sight.
Sight? What strange words he uses, without meaning.
We must lead him to the elders.
No need to lead me, I can see.
See? His senses are still imperfect. Lead him by the hand.
But look, I can... Oh, well, all right. These people had been blind for centuries. They'd forgotten even the words associated with seeing. They did not know what sight was, and they thought me an idiot, only half-formed. Especially when they led me into the pitch blackness of one of their windowless huts, and I stumbled over some...
A thousand pardons, Medina Sarote. He is a clumsy one.
I am sorry I fell down. I could not see in the darkness.
Who is this? And what is he saying?
He is but newly formed. He has come down from the rocks. He stumbles as he walks and mingles words that mean nothing with his speech.
He is a wild man out of the rocks.
No. I come from Bogota over the mountains.
You hear? Bogota. He uses wild words.
That must be his name. Bogota.
He stumbled twice as we came hither.
He must be taught.
No, you don't understand. I can see. But not in the dark. To you, darkness or light, it's all the same. But to me, to us who can see, to us outside in the world beyond the mountains...
Mountain? What are mountains?
Very well, then, beyond the rocks.
There is nothing beyond the rocks. That is the end of the world.
But surely you must realize the sky above covers more than this valley.
Sky? Above? There is nothing above but the roof of... rock. He is very raw, my children. He shall have to be taught from the beginning. Take him away. Feed him.
It shall be done.
But guide him. See that he does not stumble over my daughter again.
I shall guide him myself, Father. And feed him.
Very well.
Come, take my hand.
Yes. Thank you. It will be a pleasure to get outside again, out of this darkness.
Come this way.
What is your name?
Medina Sarote.
Mine is Juan. Juan Nunez. And... sunlight. This is better. Now I may look at you. Señorita. You are beautiful. I have not the words to tell you what a wonderful thing you are to see. So it began. I, the village idiot, the slave boy, I with my eyes still whole. I fell in love with Medina Sarote, the daughter of the elder of the village. Only to her could I open my heart. Only to her could I speak of the beauty I could see around me. It is a beautiful valley, green with grass and yellow with sunlight and flowers, bright flowers dotting the hills.
And I? You said I was beautiful too?
Yes, Medina Sarote. Yes, you are most beautiful.
It means something nice.
Something very nice. Medina Sarote, why is it you have no husband?
I have a disfigurement. These long hairs.
Your eyelashes? But they are beautiful.
They are considered a disfigurement.
Why? You are the most lovely girl in the valley. But they wouldn't know here, would they? So you have no husband?
No.
What do you think of me? Do you think of me like all the rest do? You think of me as an idiot?
No. No, you have much to learn, but you will learn it, I'm sure. And you are kind and gentle. And your voice is soft. You speak the words that are soft and warm. No one has ever spoken such words to me.
I shall speak them often. Medina Sarote, I love you.
And I love you.
Then, will you marry me?
I would be very happy to.
No, 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 I will not have it.
But, Father...
He is an idiot. He has delusions. He cannot do anything right.
But he is getting better. He's better than he was. And he is strong and kind, stronger and kinder than anyone in the world. And he loves me. And I love him.
No, I will not have it.
Great sire, if you please.
Yes, what is it, good doctor?
I have examined Bolgata, and the case is clear to me. I think very probably he might be cured.
And how might that be done?
His brain is affected by something. I believe I know what it is. Those queer things he calls eyes. Where we have but an agreeable depression, he has great lumps. Consequently, his brain is in a constant state of irritation.
But what can be done to cure him?
It is a very simple surgical operation. Remove the cause of the irritation. We will merely cut out those things he calls eyes.
Act 3 of Suspense follows in 1 minute.
We have, together, ample capacity in freedom to defend freedom. This is NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. NATO's many achievements are plates of the shield which it is forging to protect peace and freedom. But the shield is still thin and needs constant strengthening. True, NATO forces in Europe cause any potential aggressor to exercise caution, but these forces are insufficient to remove all threat of attack. As NATO forces grow, so do hopes of world peace. The United States of America is a part of NATO. You should be aware of and alert to the objectives and programs of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
And now, we continue with Act 3 of The Country of the Blind, starring Mr. Raymond Burr, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This, then, was the price of my happiness. To marry Medina Sarote, I must give up my eyes and never see her again.
But they say it will make you well, my beloved.
You don't understand, Medina Sarote. There are so many beautiful things to see in the world. The flowers, the far sky with its drifting clouds, the sunsets, the stars, and you just to see you, I would never see you again.
You will never regret it, my dearest one. My dearest with a tender voice.
Medina.
Be brave. Carry my voice in your heart. And tomorrow...
Yes?
Tomorrow will be forever.
I only meant to go up on the rocks and look out over the valley. To spend my last day of sight, feasting my eyes on the wonderful, beautiful world of light and color. I drank it in, the green of the fields, the blue of the gently curving stream, the orange of the lichen in the rocky crevasses. I climbed higher to see the great snow-capped peaks towering above and away to the distant sky, and higher as the shadows turned the snow to purple and crimson and deep blue. The valley was far below, and as beautiful as a painting. But like a painting... unreal. Medina Sarote was small and far away, a distant dream. The world of sight was here, all around, overpowering, wonderful. I turned and began to climb up that sheer rock wall. How many months it took me to make my way out over those mountains, over glaciers and snowfields and sheer precipices, I cannot guess. How I lived through the cold and the hunger of it, I cannot tell you. But I'm here at last. Back from the country of the blind.
Good heavens, man. What a terrible experience.
Terrible and... wonderful.
But you? You aren't sorry you came back?
Sorry? I see her face clearly now. It is the only thing I do see.
Nunez. You are...
Yes. The gods of the mountain have had their revenge. Those months of crawling over the snow and ice with the sun glaring down. Yes. Yes, I'm blind.
Suspense. In which Mr. Raymond Burr starred in William N. Robeson's production of The Country of the Blind. Written by H.G. Wells and adapted for radio by John Dunkel. Supporting Mr. Burr in The Country of the Blind were Peggy Weber, Ben Wright, Ed Jerome, Edgar Barrier, and Jay Novello. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in... suspense.
Suspense has been brought to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's Suspense, a great broadcast. From October 27th, 1957, with The Country of the Blind, a story by H.G. Wells and starring Raymond Burr in the title role, or in the starring role, I should say. And also in the cast, we had our good pal Peggy Weber was in that cast. We should have her on the, just call her. She lives in L.A. She's awesome. She'd be on the show. Maybe we do some phone interview with her, right? And have some people call and ask her some questions. I mean, she got to work with everybody. She played the mom. She played Jack Webb's mother on Dragnet. And she was like 18 at the time, and Jack Webb was like in his 40s doing the show. She could do all kinds of stuff with her voice. She could play old people and young girls and stuff.
It would be a treat.
Yeah, you know, we should do that. I'd ask her to be. Yeah. I mean, it's a little late for her, but, you know, she's in LA, so that's 2 hours earlier. So, yeah, it'll be fun to have people be able to call in and ask her questions about. And she loves talking about the good old days.
I bet.
She really does.